Hi there, it's Nick here. We've got a really special offer for you. For listeners of the Nick Luck Daily podcast, you can head to York for the first day of the Dante Festival for less than half price, just £12 per ticket for grandstand and paddock access for Wednesday the 15th of May. You can get up to 5 tickets per booking, and all you need to do is head to the website yorkracecourse.co.uk and enter your redemption code YORKNLD24, YORKNLD24. And you can head to York for Musidora Day, Duke of York Stakes Day, one of the fantastic meetings in the calendar, first day of the Dante meeting, for £12, up to 5 of you. Don't miss out.
You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis. By the Racehorse Owners Association and by the Racing App in partnership with FitzDares.
Good morning, welcome to the show. It's Thursday, May the 9th, and it's another lovely day here in TW11 and another lovely day on the Rudy at Chester for the middle day of their May festival. The first day was one of those very unusual days in racing where an extraordinary triumph is then punctuated by a very sad occurrence. Hidden Law won the Chester Vars very comfortably, and immediately he crossed the line. You're thinking, well, this is a proper Derby horse. And then he broke down almost immediately afterwards. And sadly, it was a fatal injury. Charlie Appleby trained. William Buick rode in the colours of Godolphin. Rishi Persad joins me this morning. Rishi, that was pretty difficult to watch, in truth.
It was awful, Nick. Just like you, I think a lot of people in the aftermath of the performance immediately thinking about the future and what this horse might achieve, having produced a brilliant performance like that in the Chester Vars. But then in the twinkling of an eye, he's injured and unfortunately had to be euthanized. It's an incident that no one is putting any blame on anybody at all for what happened. It's just one of those incidents that is unfortunate, has happened before. As much as we'd like to eradicate it from the future, it probably will happen again. This is the nature of the sport that we're involved in, but it's extremely sad, extremely devastating for the Appleby team in particular. Charlie Appleby was at pains to stress just how hard his team had worked in getting this horse on the track and improving in such a short space of time. And for them in particular, yesterday was a brutal blow after a terrific moment.
It really was a most impressive success. And I think just the manner of it will live hopefully quite long in people's memory, because even in a brief 3-race career, he was shaping up to be a bit of a star, and you're left thinking what might have been. And Charlie Appleby, of course, will bowl on to Epsom with Arabian Crown and maybe Ancient Wisdom, but there'll always be that little question mark in the back of your mind. What if Hidden Law was here? And the horses behind him may well go on and prove that he was a very good horse indeed. Not being at Chester yesterday and just trying to observe the reaction both on the television and then a social media reaction, I was left with a slightly uncomfortable feeling last night, Rishi, and I just wondered now the extent to which the sport as a whole is finding it extremely difficult to process its more difficult moments and find a response that is appropriate and dignified.
I think over the last few years, with the advent of social media, with the attention on horse welfare, it appears that it's a very defensive position that racing takes in the aftermath of a devastating moment like that for the team surrounding the horse. I think that it's got to the point now where we are trying to be so careful in presenting an excessively emotional and excessively attached feeling to horses, which I think exists anyway. Because that's the nature of everybody involved with the sport. We all love it. We all love the horses. We all love the participants. Mm. But it seems that everyone's really desperate to try and express that. So it appears to everybody who may have a question mark over the social license and the future of horse racing, will be aware that yes, it does matter deeply to the participants.
The thing is, it's not a question of being seen to care. If you care deeply about something, you care deeply about something. That is an authentic response, and it's impossible to gauge whether responses are always authentic or not. But it does strike me that there seems to have been a tendency, particularly of late, and we've had some very high profile equine fatalities of late, to go into the realms of language, which I think is pretty counterproductive in truth, particularly some of the religious imagery. Now, I'm not a particularly religious person, so I apologize if that causes offense. But when I read messages the like of "fly free, sleep well," this sort of thing, I do wonder the extent to which people are becoming removed from the reality of life and the reality of the sport. Maybe this is a comment on the way that society is shifting. I don't know. But I do think the use of language around death, around fatality, is really important. And I think the use of imagery needs to be thought about extremely carefully. And I think we need to understand what our context is, in essence. Ultimately, I think we need to be hugely respectful of those to whom this is likely to mean the most, i.e. those very, very close to the animals concerned. And I think we need to be quietly reflective in such situations, dignified, and ask, right, is there anything that has happened there that ought not to have happened?
Well, I think it means different things to different people. All tragedy, trauma, and the way we respond to it, it's all different to everybody. Will treat it differently, because what happens is we all have experiences in our lives that shape our responses to all these incidents. And for some people, obviously, some people very close to the horse, some people part of the Charlie Appleby Godolphin team, it would you would imagine and understand why it would mean so much to them for that connection. But it's those people who are far removed from that who are watching it. Now, those people who express that sadness or whatever, like, for example, most of the times when people cry about things that are unrelated to them, is because within them they have unexpressed sadness to express. And so it feels as if societies, or the racing world that we live in, are, for whatever reason now, expressing these emotions and expressing the sadness and trying to illustrate it with comments, as you mentioned, fly free, etc., because of their own perception of it, which is born out of the experiences that they've had through their lives, or in particular, maybe the last few years, which they feel that they need to express in the manner that they do.
It's a complex area, this, and one that it's very difficult to get right. But I know I'm likely to come in for some criticism for this. I just feel that our response, not as a sport, because I think that the sports administrators have done their best with the recent welfare messaging to try and, you know, enable understanding more than anything else. But I think it is almost as though, as you were saying, people are so worried about saying the right thing rather than just saying what they feel.
Yes. Yeah. the initial obviously what happened yesterday was awful, but it seemed as if the post-race reaction from the moment that the injury happened to even last night on social media, etc., it seemed heavier than I thought it would be. And that's not in any way downgrading what happened, but it seemed as if it's had quite a marked effect on a lot of people, and that was slightly surprising to me.
Yeah, and it maybe that's a function of the fact that it was unusual, insofar as it's, yes, we see fatalities and more fatalities than we would care for on a race course, and that's why, as we all know, the sport has to work ever harder to try and reduce those, which I believe that it's doing. But it's quite unusual that you get one so stark and shocking in the aftermath of a victory in a high-profile race on terrestrial television. American racing got two incidences of this last year, where horses that were about to win two very high-profile races suffered fatal injuries, and that had a very profound impact, particularly on the crowd who witnessed it and on television viewers. Or not. I'm not denigrating that in the slightest. In the round, is the sport now less well able to process these incidents than it was, say, a generation ago or even a decade ago? I'm not advocating a return to stiff upper lip, it doesn't matter, move on to the next race at all. It's simply a question of, you know, what really is your response, and what response are you trying to project to the outside world? And I think that's where we began this conversation.
Yes. And I believe the response is, whilst there's an element of genuine feeling to it, there is also an element that the responses are designed, not everybody, but certain responses are designed in order to give the right impression for those who may have an issue with the future of the sport.
And of course, in amongst all this, Rishi, lost sight of the fact that what Charlie Appleby said was that the horse took a full step over a path. Now, surely the response to that is, let's try and do something about this path.
Yes, I see why you would say that. But it appears that it's such a freak accident that no one is apportioning blame. Although Charlie Appleby did say that, a lot of people, you know, obviously John Gosden was interviewed on ITV, even Charlie Appleby himself, they've said no blame is apportioned. The course is in magnificent condition, yet that slight nagging doubt about the path remains, because that's what he said. And unfortunately, it seems to be a part of all these racecourses where there is that. And some horses, as you know, Nick, they have no issue with it and they race right over it. Others slightly balk at it and make a change of action. How do we solve that? It will take a brighter mind than mine to fix that. But at the moment, it will remain a regular feature on these racecourses.
Yeah, it's just, I'm not blaming Chester. I'm just saying the fact that he said he took a full step over a path that's put there so traffic can get in and out, or the people can get in and out, you know, it's something that if you were the executive, you'd go, right, let's just take a look at that and see, do a bit of a risk assessment. I'm sure they have already, but you'd certainly not.
What can they do? What can they do would be in all honesty, with our limited knowledge of track husbandry.
Well, I presume that road crossings or pedestrian crossings on race courses have improved over the years. I would say that there's all sorts of ways that you can make those more consistent with the turf. Maybe they've got it as good as they can get it, but you know, it's something that it would be remiss of you not to just go,
indeed,
okay, let's take a look at that.
Yeah, I agree. I would imagine that's actually, if it hasn't been done already, it's going to be done shortly.
I think it's probably prudent now to move forward with talking about what else happened on the race course yesterday. Clearly, Hidden Law was extraordinarily impressive. Do you think the horses in behind will tip their caps to him posthumously?
Well, I think Agenda, the way that he raced around Chester, looks like, I would imagine that Aidan O'Brien would want to run him at Epsom, because he seems suited by the track. He seemed to relish the way the race unfolded. But he ultimately, I mean, if Hidden Law hadn't run in the race, you'd have said that was quite an impressive performance in beating Grosvenor Square so impressively. So I'd be interested to see how Agenda goes forward. Slightly disappointed by Grosvenor Square. I thought he'd appreciate the trip, having looked as if he stayed quite strongly over a mile last year. Maybe he didn't quite see it out. So I think those two horses are obviously of interest, but particularly Agenda, and I'll be surprised if he doesn't turn up at Epsom.
Elsewhere, as regards the classics, Forest Fairy was the winner of the Cheshire Oaks for Rafe Beckett. Now, she'd only run once before, and this was probably part of quite a steep learning curve, Rishi. Beckett's done this before a few times. He's very good with these fillies. Can he get this one to win at Epsom?
Whether she can win at Epsom, I'm not sure, but she's clearly improved very quickly from her win at Wolverhampton. Another horse, it's becoming a common theme this season to run on the all weather and then progress. She stayed on quite strongly to beat Port Fairy yesterday, narrowly in the end. But you can't imagine that Port Fairy would be in the same class as perhaps Ylang Ylang. So I would assume that looking at Forest Fairy, unless she improves an enormous amount, she'll probably go to Epsom. That seems to be Rafe's sentiment. But I can't see her with a winning chance, but I can see her running well.
All right. How to win friends and influence people. Ring up Hugo Palmer during Chester week when he won't be busy at all. Hugo, thanks for taking the call. 200th Chester Cup looks like a race that you could well win, and that would mean an awful lot to the yard. Old Zoffy and Solent Gateway have been two great flag bearers. Are either or both of them ready to run the race of their lives?
Well, obviously, we hope very much both of them are ready to run the race of their lives. Solent Gateway went to the Chester Cup 2 years ago for us, and we tried to hold him up, and he pulled like almost I've never seen a horse pull for actually very nearly 2 miles before obviously not getting home. So we'll roll forward with him today. He's had two wind operations since that day. The first one sparked a lot of improvement in him, and he's had another one after a couple of disappointing starts already this year. So we're very hopeful that he can run a big race. He's a winner around Chester, and he's locally owned, so that'd be very special. Zoffy goes there, I feel, in much better form than last year. We really struggled to get him to come in his coat to look right, and we only just got him to the race, and then it rained, and he doesn't really like soft ground, and even still he only just lost out in the dying strides, and we felt that being behind was what cost him. He goes there this year £3 lower in the handicap, and in really, really good form. I do feel he's got a tricky draw, and I think Harry Davis, who's ridden Rudzinski very well the last twice for us in the Chester Cup, he's got his work cut out, because if you get in a pocket round Chester when everyone else is improving, if the horses in front of you aren't improving, you could get taken back out of the race quite quickly. And I know that everyone thinks, oh, fantastic, drawn one, but I do think it's quite a tricky spot for him.
I mean, you've got half the yard out this week, as you'd imagine, and lots of interesting chances as well. Course specialists Roman Dragon and Box to Box between them have won hundreds of races around Chester. Lastronom's a really interesting, reasonably recent recruit to the yard. You're running in the Ormond at a big price. Grey Cuban, I thought, had a bit of a squeak today. Who are you most hopeful for?
Look, we're just hopeful that we can get a winner, really. I mean, you've kind of named the horses with chances. You know, I think I felt Grey Cuban had a very strong chance going into the week, but possibly he takes on one of the most likely winners of the entire week in Michael Stout's horse this afternoon. Roman Dragon has got, I think, a great shout, but he's got to produce a, you know, quite significant career best over an inadequate trip. But he's drawn well to do it. I felt Zoffy was possibly our best chance of the week going into the week. But as I just said, you know, he does have that potentially tricky draw to navigate. So we've got chances, and the 3 2-year-olds today all go quite well. King of Angels possibly the best of them at home, but he's got the worst of the draw. Our horses don't tend to win first time out. However, this is a horse who has, this is his sixth racecourse appearance, because he's had three trips to Wolverhampton. He went to Newmarket, where he climbed out of the stalls, and he went to Windsor to pass his stalls test this week. So he is more experienced than most horses first time out. So perhaps he can negate that tricky draw and run a big race today.
All right, that was Hugo Palmer. Those of you would have pricked up your ears when he said that the third string, or the apparent third string, the biggest prize horse in the two-year-old maiden, was the one that was the best. 16-1, if you're interested at the moment, King of Angels this afternoon. But really, we were there to talk about the Chester Cup runners, Zoffy and Solent Gateway. And he seems to think that Zoffy, last year's runner-up's got a pretty good chance of going one better, Rish.
Yeah, I actually heard an interview with Michael Owen yesterday and asked about all the runners that the Hugo Palmer team had over the course of the meeting. He highlighted Zoffy as the best chance. He's obviously got a low, very low draw. sometimes that can be a little bit awkward, but I think he's obviously got a good chance, but it's a very competitive race, as it always is, and there are one or two others that I might have a slight interest in. I quite like Aztec Empire from Andrew Balding's stable. He's a horse I've always thought could be very smart. He's hovered around the 90s mark. He hasn't really progressed as much as I thought. He ended up last season disappointing, but there were a couple of performances at Newbury and York last season, and in fact he you remember he was quite well quite well fancied earlier in the season, disappointed, but he ended up putting it together from the Northumberland plate onwards. He started to look an improved horse. I think with another year on his back, I think he could be quite useful this season, so I'm happy to take a chance on him first time up. I imagine that this has been the plan for a while. So Aztec Empire for me in the Chester Cup.
All right, another man hoping to win the Chester Cup, the 200th Chester Cup, is Richard Kingscote, who has Zandabad, trained by Tony Martin. I guess, Richard, when you're booked by Tony Martin, you look at the trainer's name on the race card and let the rest take care of itself.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, first time riding a horse, so I'll be relying on Mr. Martin to help me out. But look, he looks fitting well from a couple of runs to jump. He's obviously been in good order. So, nice ride to pick up.
I mean, and there's a lot of staying handicaps in the calendar, but clearly given the dimensions of Chester, this is quite an unusual one, and you need a very particular type of horse to win it. What is the ideal conveyance for a Chester Cup?
Staying well, obviously, but also you need that bit of speed to be able to get involved at Chester, and then huge amount of luck with being Chester as it is.
But obviously, as you say, that luck is often granted to you by the fact that you've got a horse that just has a little bit of tactical speed to be able to get in a hole when you need it.
Yeah, that really does help, you know, being able to use them at the right times and being able to take gaps as they open. You know, if you're on a slogger, it makes that just that bit more difficult.
Well, Zandabad has got a bit of toe and a bit of class, and he's been in okay form over hurdles. Passenger, of course, is the horse that most people will be concentrating on as regards your mounts tomorrow, because he looked pretty exciting at times last year. What's he done in the winter in terms of development?
Yeah, I only sat on him once last week. He felt good, ready to... As you say, last year we saw some really glimpses. He's a horse I've been looking forward to this year, and it'd be nice to see him out. I really liked what he'd done at Windsor the back end of last year. Obviously, a couple of times last year we didn't have the rub of the green, but hopefully we can have a smoother year with him this year.
And obviously you're trying to make him into a Derby horse last year as well. Do you see him as a horse that is more of a mile and a quarter horse?
Yeah, I think 10 is perfect. Obviously the Derby was a mess. I asked him out at the gate and was just much too keen, so went back to basics, and Winter was much smoother, relaxed great. So, you know, not his fault, at Epsom, more my fault. I think I let the horse down a couple of times last year, so hopefully this year will be a bit nicer.
All right, that was Richard Kingscote. Passenger, I'm sure, Richie, a horse that you take a very keen interest in, given the fact that he's by Sir Michael Stout.
I mean, that's all I need, to be honest, Nick. I'm that shallow, yes. I'm hoping Passenger can...
It's not shallow, it's just that you've been following the stable for 45 years.
Yeah, actually, that's a brutal honesty. Yes, it is about 45 years. I think Passenger could be very good this season. You know, again, another horse that went from winning a maiden last season, or the Wood Ditton, to running very well and being unlucky in the Dante at York. Then he went to Epsom, blew out behind Augusta Rodin, but came back to win with a smart performance at Windsor, and hasn't been seen since. But I've been reading up David Milne's report on the gallops in Newmarket, and he appears to be going quite well. And this looks a nice opportunity first time up for him, primarily because I think he's a strong traveller, and going around Chester you think would be quite easy for him. He when he got beaten at York, he was the last horse off the bridle in the Dante. So I imagine that Chester would suit him, and I'm hoping that he's straight enough to win first time up, and then onwards and upwards to better things.
All right, well, it won't be too much longer until York's Dante Festival comes around. And fascinating contender in the Yorkshire Cup next week is Middle Earth, who was a very progressive three-year-old last year for John and Thady Gosden running in the Qatar Racing Silks. There's an added dimension to Middle Earth now because he's in the co-ownership of Kieran Maher, and it doesn't take Sherlock Holmes to work out what the ultimate target might be. And Kieran joins me now. Morning, Kieran.
Morning, Nick.
Last time we bumped into each other was very briefly at last week's Kentucky Derby. I had to do a bit of a double take as you were sporting a just-a-touch baseball cap and I didn't recognise you for a minute. How did you enjoy your Derby experience?
I loved it, actually. It's like no other, I suppose you would put it. I'd been to Kentucky before, but not to the Derby, and certainly an experience.
And people have asked me to try and compare it to events here, Royal Ascot or the Grand National or the Melbourne Cup, I can't really, because they're all so different. I mean, how would you try and explain it to an Aussie?
Well, it's very sort of Americanized, isn't it? That in England it's quite prestigious. Australia, well, where the there's big crowds and it's very different there. Like one thing that really got me was the grandstand that's sort of 200 metres past the winning post, that's sort of around the next corner. It provides for us like a velodrome type effect, and just the way they do it, they walk over from the backside of the track, and like you said, it stands by itself. It's like no other.
Yeah, intense is always the word that springs to mind when I'm working on the show. That's for sure, and very enjoyable. That didn't quite work out for Just a Touch. In those colours, the Qatar Racing Silks, though, Middle Earth for you is going to be an interesting project this year. Tell us what the plan is. Still with the Gosdens at the moment, goes to York next week.
Yeah, that's right. Goes to York and then to Royal Ascot for the Hardwick and then comes down for the Cup. He's obviously a well-credentialed horse, and very excited to, one, being able to get some of my clients into him, and one, very excited getting him into the yard.
Is this a measure of the fact that you actually have to be alive to these potential Cup horses even earlier now? You have to kind of alight on them at a point where you're at the beginning of their journey, rather than, okay, they've got all the form, now we'll go and buy one and run them in the Cup?
Yeah, well, there's certainly that element to it. You know, similarly, St. George last year, he's down with us now, and we sort of purchased him at a similar time, and there is, you pay a premium if they're qualified and in the race, and this horse certainly, come with a decent price tag anyway. But yeah, there's certainly an element of, to get in ahead of the charge, so to speak.
Now, you've got a lot of horses and a lot of owners, but when you get a horse like Middle Earth and he's kind of, prime material, if you like, is it hard to sell him at that price point, or is it actually pretty straightforward?
No, well, when you get up into that sort of echelon, those sort of horses don't, they're not readily available, so they're not hard to sell at all. Knocking people back, really.
And a horse like him's going to have plenty of tactical pace, so you've got plenty of options. It might not just be the Cup, might it?
No, exactly. Well, there's, we've got a host of, Cup would be ideal. That's, every Australian's dream and a lot of other people around the world, but he's certainly got the right credentials. But yeah, you're right, he's obviously got plenty of toe as well.
Now you're assembling a pretty mighty team. I was in Hong Kong a couple of weeks ago interviewing Andrea Atzeni. I know that victory on Circle of Fire meant the absolute world to him on the day that Stefano Kirk's dad was at was there. How's he come out of the Sydney Cup, and what will be the plan between now and the spring, your spring?
So he's had a short let up, and he resumes. He's in full training, and he come through it in really good order. So, you know, the plan will be, you know, he'll get a penalty for winning the Sydney Cup, and the plan will be not to get him any more of a penalty. He's obviously, you know, ticked the 2 mile box, and he's settled in really well to our conditions down here. So he's a pretty exciting horse also.
What do you need to do with him then? Do you need to give him at least a prep or two to get him there, or can you run him first up in the cup? What's the training regimen that going into it?
We'll probably go through the wait for age path, run him probably slightly short of his best. He too has got a good turn of foot, albeit, you know, when he was coming through the grades, his sectionals were pretty slick late in over sort of 10 furlongs. So he'll at least have a couple of runs leading into the cup.
And how's St George doing down with you? He's at Cranbourne now, isn't he?
He's at Cranbourne now. He was a horse that was, you know, what he was doing, he was quite immature and has got it all in front of him. So, again, a very exciting horse. Has furnished nicely and, is just starting to do some improving gallops now, and he should be up nice and early and have a good base on him leading in.
And of course, at Christmas time, you bade farewell to Dave Eustace. I think he's taken up residence in Hong Kong now, hasn't he? Who's slid into his shoes, if indeed his shoes can be slid into?
Yeah, they're, we've got a great team there. It certainly was no shock that something like that was thrown up to Dave, and he was. Dave was and will be hopefully very good. He was great for our business, and wish him all the best over there. He's starting to assemble his team, and I think he's really looking forward to it, getting over there, and I think he's had enough time. I think since about January he's retired from our business, so I think he's starting to get itchy feet and really looking to get stuck in.
Now, I know you're kind of a training polymath. You got you like your tentacles as far and wide as possible. You love your jumpers still. You started in jump racing. You're fascinated by racing in America. You've had your runners at Royal Ascot. Would that throughput between you and Dave still work between you and Hong Kong? Are there opportunities there to continue that relationship?
Certainly separate businesses, but our relationship definitely can continue on. There's a lot of horses obviously ferry up from Australia up to Hong Kong, and hopefully we can ferry some nice ones up for him so he can hit the board running.
And obviously, it's kind of the rite of passage now that any time I interview anyone in Australia, I have to ask them about Royal Ascot this year. Is there anything obviously on the agenda?
As in
to bring?
No. We're looking to bring them up. There's a couple of horses that I thought might have a couple of sprinters, but. There's obviously very good prize money and races down here, and the sprinters have, there's been a few retirees and there is a few holes here, so we're going to keep them here, but still very keen to get up there and right the wrongs.
And just finally, to round off where we started, the Australia-America thing has never really been an international dimension that's taken off, apart from with Shuttle Stallions. Can you see any opening there, or an opening for American horses to come to Oz, or can you see a pipeline of any sort?
Definitely. We had a mare come down called Lighthouse that she was stakes placed and went all the way through and was successful at Group 1 level and was sold for a you know healthy price. I think that's something that can be explored a lot more and something we're certainly looking to do as well.
Well, I really enjoyed that chat with Kieran Maher. He's a man who's got far-reaching ambitions, even further than having, you know, probably the biggest string of racehorses anywhere in the world and winning races beyond Australia. Rishi, some interesting points in there, not least that Middle Earth is going to have a little campaign here and then head down under.
Yes, I'm very excited about Middle Earth. I think after he won at York last year, I got carried away thinking that he'd win the Ledger. I think he's a top class horse over a mile and a half, maybe. Obviously he won that race at York over a mile and six, the Melrose. But I think the soft ground counted against him when he went to Doncaster in the Ledger. And then he produced a terrific performance again, coming back from the Ledger just, you know, a couple of weeks later at Ascot when he beat Chesapeake. The form is strong. He beat Nakib earlier in the season over a mile and a half. But the thing is, Nick, exactly the point you made about he'd be more than just a cup horse, because his sectionals, his times that he, when he won at York, he produced a really smart finishing kick. I think, if I'm correct, it was the fastest final two furlongs of any race over a mile or further during the Ebel meeting last year. I thought, if I'm correct, I can't remember specifically, but it was a very impressive final set. He's got plenty of speed, that horse, on fast ground. He could be quite useful over a mile and a half, maybe even a mile and a quarter. I'd love to see him have another go over that trip again. But I'm excited by what he's going to do this season in Middle Earth, and fingers crossed he ends up in the Melbourne Cup, because he's got that lovely blend of speed and stamina.
And Maher is such an inquisitive character. You know, you see him everywhere, just kind of taking it all in, just quietly contemplating what's going on around him and working out how he can get bigger and better.
Yes. And what I was struck by was the comment where you asked him about whether he can find, if there's anything for Royal Ascot coming over, and nothing now, but it's still burning in the back that he used the phrase unfinished business at Ascot. So I can't wait for whatever he brings over next time. Clearly he'll be bringing something with a winning chance.
Now, you might have heard me last week talking about the Magnolia Cup, the famous charity race at Goodwood. Well, it's come full circle, because its most famous winner, Khadija Mellor, has had a significant influence on one of this year's participants. After Khadija won in 2019, she was the inspiration for Ollie Bell, Phil Bell and Naomi Lawson to set up the Riding a Dream Academy, trying to draw young people and students from as many areas of the country as possible and from all backgrounds into the sport of horse racing. Now, Amila Aswat has been one of the great successes of the Riding a Dream Academy, and indeed was the recipient of the Khadija Mellor Scholarship. And now she is working in racing, and she rides in this year's Markel Magnolia Cup. And I spent a little time speaking with her, and I began by asking her really the extent to which the academy had helped her journey into the sport.
Thank you so much for having me. So the Riding a Dream Academy experience itself was absolutely amazing. We got so many opportunities, not just riding, but to have a look at the vet side of things, to go to the races, and to go to the National Horse Racing Museum as well. Honestly, they helped me so much with my race riding, and they got me to who I am and what I am today. So
where did the love first come from? What instilled this interest in riding, racing? What was your interest when you were growing up?
So my love for horses started when I was about five. My dad's friend, he was like, oh, because he has a share in a riding school. So he was like, oh, does your daughter want to have a go on a horse? And I said yes, and ever since then, I just honestly fell in love with it. I fell in love with it.
And so then it's not that easy to get into racing. And I guess that's what the academy tries to do, is to try and draw everybody, no matter where they're from, no matter which part of the country, from all diverse backgrounds to the sport. Would you have been able to get into racing without it, do you think?
No, I don't think so. Not as much as I am now. Because they have given me so much amazing opportunities and they've helped me with so much. So no, I don't think so.
Okay, so what was the pathway after that then? Where have you ended up now? You're at Kim Bailey's, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm at Kim Bailey Racing. It's going so well, honestly. I've fallen in love with all the horses here as well. And just riding out every day, you know, just being a stable groom, like it's amazing.
And what about the people you work with and the friendships that you've made in the sport?
So in racing, it's a very small world, and I've made so many friends through it, and I think that's quite a big part as well. Not only the horses, but the people, because you meet so many amazing people through this, and you just build friendships, just like with the horses. You build so many friendships and everything. So yeah.
You're going to win a lot more friends in this build up to the Magnolia Cup. How much are you looking forward to this, and what does it mean to you to be selected?
I'm absolutely buzzing, honestly. I'm so excited to do this, and it means so much to me. Because when Naomi first came up to me about it, I didn't think I could do it. I went to my friends, should I do this, you know, like it's an amazing opportunity, but am I good enough? And they told me you'd be stupid not to. So I straight away said yes after that.
Well, I really hope it's a great success for you. It's great to hear that the Riding a Dream Academy is reaping so much reward. Amelia, thanks so much for talking to me. All right, thanks to my guest today. Rishi's still with me and has a tip for you.
Well, I'm keeping the Sir Michael Stout theme going, Nick, obviously. But I'm going for something at Chelmsford in the 8:30 today.
Oh, I thought you were going to tip that odds on poke at Chester then.
The no, no, never. Yes. Well, I hope that wins, obviously. I think he might be quite useful. But Reaching High is the horse that I'm going to tip for Sir Michael Stout and the colours of His Majesty the King and Her Majesty the Queen. Out of estimate, third start was at Windsor, first start back after being gelded and first start this season behind Harper's Ferry, who obviously has high hopes. Actually, he was dropped out of the back, Reaching High. He got a lovely, lovely reintroduction to racing. And he's into a handicap for the first time off 74. Now, he's probably going to want further than a mile and a quarter, but I think 74, and he's had a run under his belt, I think he's got a great chance tonight.
Didn't you give their majesties a big honour the other day?
Did I do it?
Well, the Jockey Club.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we all agreed to it, so yes.
So what was it? Can you remind me what it was? I've forgotten.
They are patrons of the Jockey Club.
I'm glad you got that right. that just been appointed, and will you do the ceremony?
It's to be decided, Nick. I can't say one way or another.
Okay. Well, congratulations, Your Majesties, on the patronage of the Jockey Club. Rishi, thank you very much for your time today. Thank you very much for listening. That was Thursday, May the 9th. We'll be back to do it all over again tomorrow. Bye for now.
Oh, bless you.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App in partnership with FitStairs.